Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. Today we're talking with Saeed Eastman, CEO, General Manager of Jobs in the U.S. We're going to be talking about training and development, key driver to employee retention and engagement. Welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to see you both.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a little while since you've been on the show. How's the jobs in the U.S. going?
Jobs in the U.S. and jobs in ME are doing fantastic. As a company, we seem to be growing. If we could only find more people, we'd be floating in money. But
you know, isn't it amazing? This is really a problem everywhere.
It is. In every state we do business, it's the biggest challenge. And at the same time, I think it's been something that we have not planned for. So, I hear an awful lot of conversations around let's start at the school districts, let's get kids training. Those are all long-term plans. So, you know, this brings us back to the, you know, what we're doing now with the conversation we're having. I've been thinking a lot about it, and I'm taking some of this advice in my own organization. So what can I do to, you know, get new people and get people to stay with me?
Well, you know what's interesting? When we go back 10 years, back to the Great Recession, right? Not Depression, because that was way back. But the Great Recession, which hard to believe is only about 10 years ago, 10, 11. It doesn't even seem possible when I think about it. What did people cut out immediately? Training, development. Well, it's kind of like I know people who work in the maintenance industry. What do? You cut back on maintenance. You cut back on oil changes. You cut back on all the things that keep the machinery running consistently, good flow, good processes. You're developing. You're making sure it's really good. Well, we kind of did the same thing, and now we're in a predicament. And I suppose if hindsight wasn't 20/20, it's pretty obvious that we would have this problem. So, you know, I know people are scrambling to bring it back, but how do we do that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Our great state of Maine as an example, and we have a tremendous network of great institutions from the University of Maine network to the little baby Ivies scattered around the state of Colby, Bates, Bowdoin, and St. Joe's and Husson and so on and so forth. And I look at some of the programs they're putting into place, and I realize that not a lot of employers are taking advantage of some of these institutions. And so the thought process has always been around this whole idea of what can we do to both attract great people and what can we do to retain the people we have and get those people engaged. And the conversations that I've been having an awful lot have been around this idea of training and development. Let's bring back training and development in a way where we're creating brand ambassadors for our organizations. So instead of just training people on products that we sell or services that we deliver, we can do that too. But let's help these people grow, learn more to earn more. And when they do that, they become more engaged and more worthy of staying and being retained in an organization.
Well, certainly in today's day and age where individuals are looking to not necessarily stay in one place forever. I mean, what the average is 3 to 5 years now, where it used to be a lot longer than that. You know, we're talking about boomeranging, people leaving, coming back, and a new mindset and saying, hey, it's okay if you get experience somewhere else. It's okay if you get trained in a different way somewhere else or a different management technique. You'll come back maybe 3-5 years from now, and you'll be able to bring that talent back to the organization. And it's okay. That is a different mindset, right, than it used to be. How can organizations say to themselves, okay, that's acceptable when, hey, that's a mind shift for especially some of the older generation?
So, you know, I look at the companies that are in Maine, and they should be able to pull all levers to both attract people from the outside that have desire to come back. But one of the big things is, what is there to attract the people from the outside? Yes, we have beautiful coastlines, we have beautiful mountains, but at the same time, people need to make a great living. They need infrastructure. Some of the things are out of our control, right? But as a company, in order for you to attract people to your organization, I think that what your people are indicative of the type of employer that you are, right? And they speak volumes about you as an employer. So if I have a cousin that's interested in coming back and living in Maine, they're going to ask me who I should go work for based on my skill trades. And the premise is this, is I'm going to direct them to the brand that is the best. I'm going to direct them to the organization that I know treats their people well. And I'm going to direct them to a place where the workforce is engaged and happy to be where they are, right? And I think the key behind this, too, is this is all job seekers realize, or all people looking for work realize, that in order for you to get an increase in pay that is of substance, you leave. You leave your organization and go to another organization. Well, what better way to retain the workforce that you have as opposed to losing them to another institution than to say, listen, you know what? If you do these, if you learn this skill, or if you learn this machinery, or if you learn this trade, we will give you more money because you'll become more valuable to our organization. And I think a lot of times we say, you know what? That commitment to deliver training and development or training to employees, we look at the immediate ROI as opposed to the long-term ROI. The long-term ROI for training that person is a lot better than the short-term. The short-term, yes, they're not selling our products, or they're not building our widgets or whatever they're doing, but the long-term is they're a better asset to us. You know, and I always look at it and say, investing in your people is like a service. It's like a service program for your machinery, right? You should have some budget line item for what it is to invest in your workforce. And I think that's something that we do less and less of, right?
There's no question. Well, let's talk about that branding portion for a second. Branding is such a key element today, especially with social media and especially with online resources that people can now go and see exactly how people think about their boss, think about the organization, think about the people they work with. They kind of get to hear the dirt, right? And we used to call that digital dirt. Now it's really just the dirt that's out there. Now, in fairness, people are more apt to write the bad things than write the good things. That's human nature. Nothing's really new about that. I think we know that that's the truth. But with all that being said, right now, today, if you recommend a place, I know my nieces and nephews are all between the ages of 20 and, 35. If they're looking at a company, they immediately go research it online to see what is said about it. I mean, I would have maybe I would today, but I wouldn't have thought about that years ago. And that really makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. So, you know, what's interesting is when we talk about brand, a lot of times we think about the fact that it's your logo, it's your color scheme, it's what your mission is, it's your marketing. But what we're really talking about when we talk about brand is we're talking about your reputation in the markets you serve, in the places where you do business, amongst your customers, amongst your workforce. And that reputation is worked on and built by the people within your organization, because you can't buy a good reputation. You can fake your way into it, but then you'll watch your turnover rate, right? And know the difference. But the fact of the matter is this is it's really a reputation meter. And a lot of people go in and see what the reputation is of an organization online before they apply. Let's face it, job seekers or individuals looking for work are as savvy as employers and recruiters looking for job seekers. They know where to go and find the dirt. The interesting part about all of this for me is this is, it's really important that you build advocates for your organization from within. So for every person that leaves your organization because they're disgruntled, there's 5 and 10 other people who are saying positive things about you. And that's something that I think that we neglect to do. We neglect to realize that our workforce is our brand. You know, what we do, what we invest in them is our brand. And to your point, really, there are organizations now that will monitor your reputation online. Now, let's just say this. Some small business is not going to be able to afford a reputation branding organization, but large organizations do. So the question is, what can you do as an employer that's small to keep your reputation in such a way that when somebody thinks of buying a product or working, that they go to you? And that's really about your workforce. It's what people say about you in the neighborhood and what people say about you at the holiday parties and at the baseball games, etc. And the first thing anybody ever says to anybody, hey, so what do you do? Where do you work? Right? And I think it's that response, that first response is what is the trigger to the rest of the conversation. And if it's positive, you're way ahead of the game.
Well, there's no question. You know, what's funny is, you know, we do a lot of training at CMA, and one of the things that I tell leaders all the time is you have a reputation individually. By the way, you've always had a reputation. If you were always a jerk, and years ago, people would have to word of mouth tell that. Now it's all online. And it didn't change the fact that you were still a jerk. You're still a jerk, right? Nothing's really changed.
It's true. It's
right?
True.
And the fact is that, you know, when you're looking at this, you know, supervisors, I tell them, you got to have thick skin. You do. You also got to be responsive to this. And you've got to adapt and change and modify because the world is different today. And, you know, we have people that come in. We had somebody come in looking for a job, and one of the first questions is, tell me about how they treat their people. And I've looked online, and I've seen this, and they brought examples. And I went, well, let me see those, right, in terms of this. And I said, well, I will get the organization to, you know, to respond to this, because this is what they're questioning, right? And by the way, it's not like it isn't defendable, because they also realize that people say negative things, right?
Absolutely.
It's like, we just want to hear, what's this about?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, because the organizations are out there, they're spending a lot of resources on doing that reputation metering, right? At the same time, on the job seeker side, when you think about it, there's businesses out there that are focusing on background checks and servicing job seekers and providing job seekers their backgrounds before the company pulls it, so that you can be preemptive in answering a question. You were 18 or 19 years old, you got caught with an open container, and you got a fine or whatever the situation may be. How do you address that? You know, what do you do? What do you tell your employer? But if you know it comes up on your background record, and to say it, so your background really is supposed to be an indicator of reputation as well. And obviously nowadays, you know, as for individuals, we have the TikToks, the Snapchats, the Instagrams, the Facebooks, and all these other platforms where employers, whether job seekers know this or not, they go and look on the to see what the job seekers are like. At the same time, I think conversely, there are the metering companies like Glassdoor and others that monitor what a company's reputation is. I will say this. I think everything has to be taken with a grain of salt. And I also go back to this idea of, you know, if you don't talk to people directly, they won't know you and you won't know them. In other words, the humanity factor of if we're all making decisions with machinery in between, we never know the real truth. If I try to judge somebody based on what I see in their social media post, that's not that person. I mean, their feet are always on vacation. There's always a selfie of their toes on vacation somewhere. I know that's not really the person, right? But at the same time, if I see something,
I know those people,
right?
By the way.
their feet have better vacations and lives.
No
than
question
I do,
about right? that. Yeah.
So, but you know, it's like I look at then there's the company aspect, right? And whatever you see online may not be indicative of the company. Right, and I think it's important that we tie both the training and development, the ambassadorship program of getting job seeker or getting individuals within your organization to speak well on your behalf, and also the fact of the matter is, you know, as tight as the job market has been, and I think we can honestly say that compensation has not caught up to the tight labor market. We say that job seekers, it's a job seekers market. But at the same time, we look at the employers and they're like, I can't find people. And the reality is, this is not that they can't find people. They can find people, they just can't afford them because the competition for these people is high in other markets, right? So that's where, you know, there's that little, there's that disconnect between you know, what's going on with job seekers, what's going on with employers. And I think that the best way to get people to increase their worth in our organization, increase their pay, is to learn a skill. And I think that the University of Southern Maine in Portland is doing a lot with programs and encouraging employers and encouraging young people and also people who are in transition to come and take courses online. And I think that's something that's extremely important.
No question about it. We're talking with Saeed Eastman, CEO of the Jobs in the U.S. We're talking about training and development, key driver for employer retention and engagement. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner, in store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAKorea.com and verrill-law.com. Today we're talking with Saeed Eastman. He is the CEO at Jobs in the U.S. And we're talking about training and development, key driver to employee retention and engagement. Saeed, you did this article on Jobs in ME, and you put it up online, and you talked a little bit about this. And we'll talk a little about where people can get the article. But one of the things you cite in the article is a Pew Research Center survey called the State of American Jobs. Can you talk to us a little bit about the information and the importance of it?
Yeah, I think the interesting part about the article for me is it's both driven by personal experience, but I wanted to back it up with data from a third party that was spent an awful lot of money surveying and researching this topic. And the Pew Research Center did a survey called the State of American Jobs. And one of the facts that I thought was really critical was it found that more than half of adults in the labor force say it will be essential for them to get training and developing new skills through their work life in order to keep up with the changes in the workspace. In addition, it said 35% of workers, including about 3 in 10 adults with at least bachelor's degrees, say they don't get the education and training they need to get ahead at work. And so from my perspective, is instead of waiting to train people, to have people go through the education cycles in elementary school and high school and college, we have an immediate need for people, an immediate need for training. And what better way as business people than to actually take ownership of a problem to fix it? And the best way to do that is to engage our workforce, figure out what skills we need in our business, figure out which individuals are willing to take on those skills, and doing some sort of investment. And by the way, the investment that you make in training one of your people is so important because the cost of hiring somebody is somewhere to the tune of $4,000 to $5,000. To find an individual and put them in your company and get them trained has a tremendous cost. And what putting somebody in a course might cost you a couple hundred dollars for some online course by one of those massive online course programs like edX, etc. But it might also cost you $1,500 to send them into a certificate program or $2,000 in a certificate program at one of the great schools in Maine. So
there's no question. You know, there's a great quote that's out there which basically says, you know, the CFO asking the CEO, what happens if we invest in our people and develop them and they leave us? And the CEO responds, what happens if we don't and they stay? Right? There's this real question of like, well, if they leave, we've spent all this money and we wasted it. Well, yeah, but let's think about the other side. If we don't trade them and they stay, they're not going to help us.
Right.
Grow and develop, right?
It's such a great quote, and I really appreciate the fact that you're bringing it up, because my take on it is very much in the sense of, you know what, if you train great people and they recognize your investment in them and they leave and go somewhere else, that is a network that you have. That basically is a seed that you've planted at another organization, and your talent pool is now speaking on your behalf. And I've seen great mergers and acquisitions occur as a result of that type of cross-pollination of organizations. One person goes to another company, talks about the great company that they came from, and next thing you know, joint ventures are established, strategic alliances and partnerships are established. It is, in a way to grow your business. So I 100% agree with you in that statement.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I know training costs money. Look, let's cut right to the chase. We know it costs money. We know it costs time, because time is money. You know, I talk to CEOs. I know you talk to CEOs all the time, and they're concerned about if we take them out of the business for 2 hours, we can't make what we make, and we're so busy that 2 hours is a lot of time to train, or an hour is a lot of time to train. And if you talk to the employees, they're like, yes, but I'd be faster, smarter, quicker, better, and all those things. And it would pay for itself, albeit over the long haul. And that's probably the mentality that I'll ask you about, is this short-term thinking versus long-term thinking. What's your take?
So, you know, my take is, if you do something for the short term, you're always working in the short term. If you strategize and plan for the long term, yes, there is immediate and short term implications, but the long term ROI is much better. You know, I look at the people in the trades as an example. You talk to somebody who's building homes and they're looking for carpenters. One of their big complaints is, we're graduating kids who don't even know the difference between a flathead and a Phillips screwdriver, right? We don't know how, they don't even know how to hold a hammer, much less swing a hammer effectively. And if I have to take my best tradesperson, my best carpenter, framer, any skills within the trades, right, and put them as a trainer for somebody, that person is less productive. Well, how productive are you if you don't have effective people? How productive are you if you don't have a talented workforce? And so, yes, maybe the training is an after-hours program. And I don't mean apprenticeship and, you know, free apprenticeship. I mean, pay people something to apprentice and train with you after hours. I mean, what's really amusing is this. There are summer camps that are in Maine that are focusing on training kids to know how to work with tools. Because kids are growing up, being shuttled from one sport to another. The parents are so busy doing that, they don't tinker with anything. They don't have the hands-on experience of building things. You know, you think about the old days of boxcar derbies and, you know, Boy Scout, Girl Scout, car races that you're doing with your parents. And your parents are teaching you how to use tools. Yes, it is time spent with your family, but it's also time that you're building something. And I think that's something that the trades organization have to take that approach of, these young adults that are coming to work for us are like our children, because we need to train them, we need to nurture them, and we need to make an investment in building our own workforce. One of our clients, who is Hancock Lumber, they train from within. They have a workforce that is that prides itself on recruitment and training from within. And when I see some of the stuff that they put online promoting their organization, it's stunning to me. And we're talking, you know, yes, generations of generational, you know, lumberyard, but they invest in their workforce.
There's no question about that.
And also they do something which I think we'll talk about a little. That's in the next segment that I think is extremely important. Is they humanize the process of attracting people to their organization.
Well, and they are humans. They're attracting.
Yes.
Right. You know. Right. And you said ROI. I like to use the term ROP, return on people. Right, in terms of it is ROI, yep. But it's return on people. And you know, it's interesting. You talk about the trades a lot, and I think generationally there's this shifting happening that people are saying, okay, there is a place for college, there's a place for a degree, and I'm a big supporter of education. But to what end, right? A student who doesn't necessarily have the excitement or aptitude for studying books and likes swinging a hammer or fidgeting with a car or screwing together pipes or, you know, really getting in there and getting dirty and making it happen. I think there was this perception over the last number of years that that's not a good job. Well, I'm going to tell you, there are six-figure jobs now, people with plumbing and electrical and framing and different, six figures, right, or more.
Yeah.
So I find it fascinating how it does seem like those are turning. Are you seeing that as well?
Absolutely. And you know, what's really interesting about that topic is you look at the work ethic of generations from the immigrant workforce. The first generation is the hardest working. Then they invest in their kids and they put them in colleges. And the next generation is softer than the next one and the next one, right? So this idea of people getting softer and being further away from the skills, from the trades, it's also about this stigma, right? It's, oh, he's the plumber, he's the electrician, he's the delivery person. Well, let me just tell you, the truck driver is getting $100,000 income. The plumber has the house down, you know, in the vineyard, or has the house in, you know, on Cape Elizabeth. You know, it's like you look at it and you're like, these people have a skill. That skill is no different than a coder, a developer, an engineer. They can do something with their hands that we can't do, right? And then the interesting part is this: part of it is as parents, we want our kids to do better than us. And the perception is, well, this is how we're doing, so we're not, you know, we don't want them to suffer a little. Well, suffering sometimes is okay. You know, you can earn your stripes and be better at it, you know.
And by the way, the definition of suffering is different too, right? They, you know, some people say, oh my God, you don't want to do that. Well, maybe I do. And maybe I'm going to be really good at it, right? And that may not be like you, but it's what I internally, you know, think and feel.
No, I have a kid who's graduating from high school this year, and he's very enterprising and has his own business. And it's a huge sense of pride for me because he doesn't ask me for money. I ask him for money when I don't have a dollar in my pocket, right? But the interesting part about it is this, is when we talk about what he should do and how he and what he loves to do, I know where his passion lies. His passion lies in entrepreneurialism and building a business. And my take on it is, yeah, you like having your landscape business and your snowplow business and your wood cutting business, but guess what? Those three, that business would be 100 times better if you're well educated. So continue to do what you're doing, but learn good business fundamentals of how to run your business, how to ask for financial credit from banks, etc. And I think that's what education does. And also education teaches us the ability to learn. And I think a lot of people forget that we go to college, we think we're graduating we're getting a degree, but what we're really doing is coming out with an experience to learn. I mean, my degree was in my political science. I'm working in, you know, software and recruitment media. So how the heck did that happen? Nobody ever taught me that in college. But they did teach me how to learn. And that's something that I think is extremely important.
That's exactly right. That's exactly true. You know, it's interesting. We talked a little bit about brand, right? Company's brand. And in this, you talk a little bit about making sure that you create brand ambassadors and not only gain personal and educational career both, but also bring you career growth, but bring it on. You know, one of the things that I think about, and I'm sure you see it, is we can tell online if companies are having trouble hiring because there's always ads, right? Or there's always the same ad, and it's always there. And we say to ourselves, why is it always there, right? And in this market, it's certainly hard to find people, but there are times it's just constant, right? How do companies avoid that trap where people go, oh, they're always looking?
Yeah. So, you know, interestingly enough, there's a fine line, and I think it's good. It's both good and bad, depending on how you approach it. So a prime example would be this. If I have a career site, or if I'm listing jobs on a job board like Jobs in ME, right? If my job is dated, that's bad. But if I go in and I refresh my job and that job shows a present date, if my website shows that the jobs are current and refreshed and thought about, then that's a positive thing. If it's dated, it just means that, you know what, it's out there. You don't care about your site any more than you care about your workforce, right? And I think that's really what it is. The other part is this, is I'm a firm believer in this idea that recruitment should not be reactive. It should be proactive. So recruitment marketing is something that, and branding is something that you should be doing all the time. You should be working with your agency, or you should be working with your advertiser or staffing organization on a regular basis for a plan that shows what would happen if I lost, what if I lost my best salesperson? What if I lost my best marketing person? What's my strategy to get that position filled immediately, right? So anyways, from that perspective, I think I agree it should be continuous. I don't believe that if people don't pay attention to it is a good thing. They should definitely do that.
Well, we're talking with Syed Eastman, CEO of Jobs in the U.S. We're talking about training and development, key driver to employee retention and engagement. You're listening to the HR Power Hour. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we will be right back on News Talk WLOB.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsInME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsInME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsInME.com. That's JobsInME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
This tax season, AutoZone has everything your car needs. Did you know that with the Loaner Tool program at AutoZone, you can borrow a specialty tool with no purchase necessary? Choose from over 100 tools to help you get the job done right, no matter how big or small. And right now, get 5.25 ounces of Lucas Complete Field Treatment for $4.99 each, or two for $8. Visit any of our 5,000 locations nationwide, and let's get you what you need. Deposit required. Restrictions and details in store. Get in the zone.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, our guest has been and continues to be Saeed Eastman, CEO of Jobs in the U.S. And we've been talking about training and development. We're talking about employer retention and engagement. But, you know, Saeed, you and I had a conversation the other day, which I thought would be very relevant for the audience today. And you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to let you introduce the topic.
Well, you know, first of all, it's so great to be here with you guys, and it's a great program. So I'm really happy to be back.
Thank you. We appreciate your sponsorship, by the way.
Absolutely. So the topic that I think has become relevant more so now than it was when, you know, recruitment media and online recruitment media started is the topic of humanizing recruiting. And when I say humanizing recruiting, I really think about the fact that we're now talking about the online recruitment market and recruitment marketing in general. There's an assessment process that's done by a machine. The application process is done on your website. The database or CRM, which is the applicant tracking system, has its own filtering platform. It then sends your data to the HRIS system, right? On top of all of that, I look at the individuals on the other side, and they're going, I've applied to 1,000 jobs, and I have not gotten a single call back. And then I look at the employer side, and they go, we can't find people. What we've done is we have created an intermediary platform that is basically creating a bottleneck for us in having a communication with job seekers. Both the apply process is hard and the lack of interaction. Now there have been articles in the Wall Street Journal about robots doing interviews, right?
Go right online and watch it. Right? There's actual robots that will do the interview for you.
Yeah. And then you have a chatbot that will actually do a complete Q&A with you on a first call.
That's right.
So when is the human getting involved? And my other problem is this, is we're struggling to find people and we're creating more reasons to throw them to the side. So humanizing recruiting is about simplifying the recruitment process in a way that is effective for your business. A prime example would be you are a trucking organization and you're trying to find truckers. So guess what? What's the first question that you want to ask? Do you have any felonies or do you have any drug issues that we need to know about? Get that off the table because, you know, they could have a clean driving record, but if they have drug issues, it creates a liability for you, right? You may not want to hire them. Why wait and make the process so cumbersome for them that it's the last question you ask, right? The apply process for job seekers in general, and some of our competitors out there are saying, hey, put your jobs on our site. We provide assessments. You mean you provide a reason to filter people out, right? How about this? How about apply to a job. Let us accept the information from the people as easily as possible, right? And then on the back end, evaluate the candidates based on the resumes or the cover letters that we review, and then send an assessment to those who qualify as opposed to putting everybody through the same grinder, right? And that's the lack of humanity that we're seeing in the recruitment space. We're seeing more systems in place that are making the process cumbersome, right? And then the other part that I think is extremely important is, and we're taking this really at heart now, and that is this idea of when was the last time when you first started talking about looking for a job that you talk to either a recruiter or a hiring manager? It's almost never now. And, you know, thank God we're trying to do a little bit more in the state of Maine with career fairs. I mean, we just did one in Portland and we had 30 companies, over 300 job seekers come through the stiles in a span of 3 hours. And that's because there is an appetite both by some employers that get it, and there's an appetite by some job seekers that get it, that getting in front of somebody puts me that much closer. It's almost like an internal referral because somebody knows who I am. They met me. They know what I look like. They know the impressions that I'm making on them. They know I'm articulate. Whatever the upside is to that conversation, there is a positivity to that humanity of having a direct conversation with somebody.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to work for a human.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what's really crazy is you work, you get hired all electronically, you get to your office, and then you start getting emails from the people on the other side of your cube. Like, people don't want to communicate with people. And that's a problem. I mean, so humanizing recruiting is basically the beginning of bringing back this idea that, you know what, the best assessment is a face-to-face. The best conversation is a face-to-face. And you see the emotions in people when they see that there's an opportunity brewing, when they see something positive happening in that exchange. You can see the change in who they are as people. They light up. They sit taller in their seat because they see something positive. That's the humanizing process in recruiting. And we're seeing less and less of that. And I sell recruitment media, so you would think that I'm saying here, come and push all the buttons that you want. I actually tell job seekers, apply to the companies you really want to work for. And I tell employers, when somebody applies to your job, that person has directly expressed an interest in working for you. And your lack of courtesy in responding to them and sending an email back is making you look bad. It's hurting your brand and is demonstrating your lack of humanity and humility as an employer. You think that because you're going to pay them, that they're beholden to you and you shouldn't respond. That's the humanity in recruitment that I think has to come back.
Well, yeah, well, we talked about the first two sections having to do with the brand that you're trying to create. This is exactly the discussion point of, you know, are you creating a culture of that you care, right? That you care about the individual, not that you coddle, just the opposite, actually, that you care about them, that you care about their success, that you care about their growth, that you care about their development, that you care about training them, that you care about hiring them in a respectful way, that if they apply, you give them. I mean, it's kind of like, if you make this a very simple thing, you walk in, you say hi to somebody and they don't respond, they walk away. What do you think? You're like, well, that's pretty darn rude. It's the same thing when nobody responds to you online. It's the same response.
Absolutely. You know what's interesting is this is, you know, we talk about your first day on the job. Does somebody greet you at the door? Do you have your spot to work? Is there a human that engages with you? Or is it, you know, here's your desk, here's maybe your pencil. Is there a welcome note that goes out to everybody introducing the human that's coming to work in our organization? We are in the human capital industry, right? We are in the human resources industry. And in that case, we have to humanize both the recruitment process, humanize the interview process, humanize the apply process. And by the way, there is room for assessments, no questions about it. Assess people based on their skills, based on fit for a specific job. But do it in a way that makes them feel like they're valued, as opposed to a way that makes them feel like they're just a commodity. There's always a fine line for when you do that. So and then at the same time, I think when you are an organization that values people that work for you, and we talk about millennials and we talk about, you know, the gold star, everybody got a gold star and everybody got coddled. The reality of it is this is, those millennials are going to be the workforce that we need. And yes, they will say they want work-life balance. Well, there is a difference. Every company gets to define what that work-life balance, you know, everybody gets to define what the job is. But the other is, humanizing is also respect, right? You respect your workforce, they give it back to you. And I think to your point earlier, it's, you know, how you get treated at your workforce, it's like kind of like parenting, right?
It is just, you know, like parenting.
And the sad part is some cases it can be really bad. If you treat people really badly, it comes back to you tenfold bad. But at the same time, you have to have that way of managing the different personalities, different grades of individuals and what they can and can't do. And I think our process, recruitment process in general, in most companies is broken. And there is no standard or rhyme or reason for some of the applications that I see. And I think they make job seekers feel like they're just a commodity. And you know, when you have to look at applications, the number of applications somebody has to fill for the same company, it's inundating. It's crazy. You go to a mall looking for a job, if they don't have an electronic version, you basically go from store to store to store filling out the same application. Why is that? Why can't it be a better process? Like you, especially when it's a centralized place like that.
No, there's no question. Well, we're talking with Saeed Eastman, CEO of Jobs in the U.S. We're talking about training development and humanizing recruiting. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsinME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsinME.com. That's JobsinME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. Today we're talking with Saeed Eastman. He's the CEO of Jobs in the U.S., and we're talking about all sorts of good stuff regarding recruiting. But right now we've been on the topic about humanizing recruiting. And, you know, Saeed, you hear from a lot of job seekers, a lot. What are they saying?
Well, you know, if I could give any advice to employers... One is to simplify the recruiting process, to make it so that it is easy for job seekers to apply to their organization. And when we ask and survey both job seekers at our career fairs, and for a short plug, we have a career fair coming up on April 23rd in Auburn, Maine. So if you want information on that, send an email to sales@jobsinme.com or call 877-374-1088. And when we survey these job seekers at our career fairs or survey our job seekers online, some of the stats are staggering. A prime example would be 45% of the job seekers we talk to say their biggest frustration is never, ever hearing from employers. 45%. That's a huge number, right? And then in addition, some of the applicants are also saying, and 47% of these are saying, they never receive any communication, even 2 months past the apply process, not even a rejection letter. And that's staggering to me. And so when we talk about humanity and humanizing people, nothing says, I don't give a you-know-what about you, than not even responding or having the courtesy of sending an auto-generated response, right? The other thing is this, is I think we talk about the tightness of the labor market, but year over year, job seekers are saying that it is difficult to find a job every other year. And it's not because the lack of jobs. It's the process. The process that we are talking about is the recruitment process, the apply process, and also the intermediation of the job seeker and the employer with all the technology that we've jammed in between, right? And it's, by the way, that's 39% of these job seekers are saying that they're finding it difficult year over year.
You know, that is a staggering amount of numbers. It's almost 40% of the population. That's wow. When you really think about that, that's scary for employers.
It's, and you know, it's the interesting part is they don't realize that 40% of these people that apply to jobs on their site are out there talking about them.
Right.
They're talking about the fact.
Part.
Yeah. They're talking about the fact that if I'm out of work, my friends are always helpful. And hey, where'd you apply? Where are you looking? Can you want to leverage my network? And you know, I applied to so and so and never heard back. And by the way, some of the biggest organizations out there in the state of Maine, but also in other states and other markets and national, are still falling short of communicating with job seekers. And candidate experience is one of the, is, from my perspective, has become one of the most important things that every employer should focus on.
There's no question about it. Saeed, I want to thank you again for being on the show today, the HR Power Hour. You're welcome back again soon. Hopefully we'll make that happen.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. Love being here. It's great. It's a great program, and everybody should listen.
Absolutely. We agree 100%. Go to HRPowerHour.com after this show. You'll be able to click on Saeed and be in touch with him directly and go to his organizations and certainly look at Jobs and ME on the site if you are interested in a role or a company that needs great people. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
When do I need to provide a legal defense to a supervisor that has been named individually in a lawsuit? Hi, this is Ben Ford from Verrill's Labor and Employment Practice Group. If you've been listening to this program, you know that we've been talking about individual supervisory liability and how that trend is sweeping the country. We get a lot of questions from our clients about when or if they need to provide a legal defense to the supervisors that have been named individually in the lawsuits. The question of whether or not to provide a legal defense depends on what the supervisor is being accused of. If the supervisor is being accused of something that was part of their normal everyday jobs, then the supervisor can argue that they were acting as an agent for the employer, in which case the employer would probably have to tender a legal defense to the supervisor. But there are some cases where the supervisor is being accused of acting so blatant and egregiously that the employer can argue that the supervisor was acting outside the scope of their employment or their supervisory authority, in which case the employer would not need to provide a legal defense. Got a question about individual supervisory liability? Call Verrill's Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.